Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily and sometimes more than daily podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So is it really only day two of the election campaign? So much has happened. Katie, last night the Tories launched their election campaign. How was it?
So they had what you could describe as a rally, depending what angle you were looking at it from. If you're looking at it on your television screen, lots of placards,
music.
If you were one of the journalists who actually attended, you'll see it was actually a very large conference space where they had, for strategic reasons, managed to get their crowd in for good filming and to give off a sense of atmosphere. That said, I think that the rally and the whole launch went pretty well for the Conservative Party's, particularly if you compare it to what they've had previous days.
So relatively low bar, yeah.
There is a low bar. You know, we've had rows about Jacob Rees-Mogg's comments on the Grenfell fire. We've had a cabinet minister resigning. Moments before, really, the launch kicked off, you had Nadeem Zahori appearing on the Andrew Neil show, where he somehow got himself into a bit of a tangle, where he was being asked if he really believed that Jeremy Corbyn would shoot wealthy people. This was linked to the fact that Boris Johnson had previously compared Jeremy Corbyn to Stalin. And Nadeem Zahori's reply to this was, "I don't know, you'll need to ask him." Now, as far as attack lines go, I think that if you look to 2017, one of the things that I think you could say was a problem with the Tory campaign was the fact that they seemed to keep going to these suggestions that seemed over the top. So the idea that the UK would turn into Venezuela if Jeremy Corbyn was Prime Minister. Now, there are lots of things you can say would happen if Jeremy Corbyn was Prime Minister, but I don't think you need to exaggerate it to the point of saying that you are going to have deaths of billionaires all talking about how the UK could transform into Venezuela. And it feels a bit like perhaps mistakes of previous campaigns there. But in terms of the launch, Boris Johnson seemed very upbeat. He was introduced by Andy Street, the Midlands mayor. He was introduced by Priti Patel and also James Cleverly. And I think the fact that they've held this in the Midlands does give us another sign of where the Tories are really targeting in this election. I wrote about it previously in the magazine, but the North and the Midlands and this idea that pollsters call the Red Wall, which is like this block of seats that have traditionally voted Labour, but they think their areas are very heavy to leave, and they think that Boris Johnson could break the red wall, basically. And if he can do that, then you start to get there. In terms of Boris Johnson's Brexit message, he's very keen to say that he had a Brexit deal ready to go, oven ready. There was some talk of a microwave. I'm going to leave James on that because I don't have a microwave in my kitchen. But a different podcast for a different time. But ultimately, the message was, if you vote for the Conservatives, they can get Brexit done very quickly, or at least the first stage, because they have everything in place and all Boris Johnson needs is a majority.
Okay, James, first of all, explain the microwave joke. And secondly, was it important that Priti Patel was there out of the people who were there? Does that show whether or not the Conservatives are going for more of a crime-heavy focus on this election campaign?
I think there's going to be a lot of crime. And
not actual crime.
Sorry. I mean, there'll be a big focus on crime and a big focus on immigration. The Tory attack is interesting. So the 20,000 extra police officers were designed to blunt Labour's very successful attack from last time about police cuts. The Tories are now trying to say, but we're going to give these police extra powers. We're going to back them. Boris Johnson made this big point in his speech saying, you know, we're in favour of stop and search. Labour are against it. And interestingly, Boris Johnson, who is obviously at the more kind of liberal end of the spectrum on immigration, he's come up with what he is happy with as his immigration attack line, which is, you know, he wants an Australian-style point system to get the immigration that this country needs, and, you know, Labour want, quote-unquote, unlimited immigration.
That's a new attack line,
isn't
it?
That is a new attack line, yes. You saw one of the things, as Katie was saying, one of the things the Tories want to do in this campaign is they are relying on Boris Johnson's abilities as a campaigner. That's one of the things they think is different from 2017. And their hope is that Boris Johnson is going to get them to the top of the news bulletins each night just because he's a more interesting speaker. That, and, you know, he needs a crowd to get fired up. That's why they waited to launch until the evening. I thought another thing which is interesting to me is, and you might say this is quite some brass neck, but the Tories are going back to those 2015 warnings about the coalition of chaos. Mm. You know, Priti Patel was explicitly, you know, if you don't vote for a Tory government, Tory majority government, you're going to end up with a hung parliament, and that is going to be chaotic. And the Tories really think that these warnings are already beginning to cut through. They think one of the reasons their fortunes in Scotland are turning round is because people are beginning to clock that essentially anything other than a Tory majority government would lead to IndyRef 2. And they think they can really bring back those 2017 Tories who've gone to the Lib Dems by saying, look, if you vote Lib Dem, you are risking a Corbyn government. Mm. And that, they think, is how they squeeze those voters back to the Tory party.
Is it a bit of a counterintuitive / risky move, though? I mean, coalition of chaos in the last few years has become almost a joke phrase.
I think it is striking that Boris Johnson was talking about the rut we've been in for the last 3 years. Well, we've had a Tory government for the last 3 years, but he's obviously very confident they can move on from that. I think the other striking thing about this launch was how all the speakers were talking about what had been done in the past 108 days, much more so than they were talking about what had been done in the past 9 years.
Sure. And Katie, obviously the other big news is Tom Watson, deputy leader of Labour, actually former deputy leader of Labour. Last night he resigned from his role and from his role as an MP as well. Tell us about that.
Yes, so we had the news last night, which I think did surprise most in Westminster, that Tom Watson is not only stepping down as deputy leader, he's not going to be seeking re-election as a Labour MP. Now, Tom Watson has been seen as a thorn in Jeremy Corbyn's side for good reason. He has, in many ways, whether intentional or not, but I think most would say it was the former, managed to undermine Jeremy Corbyn's leadership. You've seen various attempts in terms of the party's Brexit position on this. And I think that Tom Watson staying in the Labour Party up until now meant that some Labour moderates, that you might call them, who thought about leaving because of Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, had been convinced to stay on because Tom Watson was saying, look, we've got to stay and fight. We need to be in the Labour Party. And obviously, Tom Watson deciding not to stay and fight sends a certain signal. It is worth pointing out that in Tom Watson's letter, however, he's very keen to play down the idea that this is because he takes issue with the leadership or the direction of the Labour Party. He is saying this is purely down to personal reasons. I think there are lots of people who will find it hard to believe it's 100% down to personal reasons, to be frank. But you can see, both in his letter and in the reply from Jeremy Corbyn, both figures are trying to keep up almost a friendly sense of the relationship between them. And Tom Watson says that he is going to be campaigning throughout the election for Labour and plans to work over the next couple of years in public health. But it does, I suppose, leave a path or a way back to the Labour Party for Tom Watson, because it's not that he is leaving the Labour Party full stop. He's just deciding not to continue his time in Parliament for the Labour Party. It's in stark contrast to Ian Austin, a former Labour MP who has already stood as an independent, citing Jeremy Corbyn's failure to deal with anti-Semitism. He has gone further today in an interview with the Today programme, which I think we can hear the clip here.
Well, look, Nick, I only ever wanted to be a Labour MP. And I only ever really wanted to be the Labour MP for Dudley, you know? And it's been such a huge privilege to do this job. Job I've loved, the place I love. But I've got to be honest with people, and I'm not going to run at this election. The country faces a big choice. There's only two people who can be Prime Minister on December the 13th, Jeremy Corbyn or Boris Johnson. And I think Jeremy Corbyn is completely unfit to lead our country, completely unfit to lead the Labour Party. And after 34 years of, I joined the Labour Party as a teenager. I worked for the Labour Party. You know, in my 30s, I was a government advisor. In my 40s, I was an MP and a minister. But so it's really come to something when I tell decent, traditional, patriotic Labour voters that they should be voting for Boris Johnson at this election. I can't believe it's come to this, but that's where we are.
I think Ian Austin saying that ultimately only two people can be Prime Minister, Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson, in this election, and his advice to the public is to go for Boris Johnson, is a moment. If you think about Ian Austin, he's been in the Labour Party a very long time. I think he was already seen as a Corbyn sceptic, but I think to go so far as to say a Tory Prime Minister is better than a Labour minority government is quite a move.
Now, James, Ian Austin stood for Labour in 2017 when Jeremy Corbyn was already leading the party. So why isn't he standing now? I mean, what's new?
I think the difference between 2017 and 2019 is this, which is in 2017, at the start of that campaign, Labour were 24 points behind. I think it was, and I think lots of people from the moderate wing of the Labour Party, the old Labour right, which I think both Ian Austin and Tom Watson are from, took the view that the electorate might do their job for them and remove Jeremy Corbyn as Labour leader, and that, you know, the defeat would send the Labour Party back to sanity. You can't say that now, because in this campaign, Jeremy Corbyn starts it within striking distance of number 10. And also, over the last 2 years, the left and the Labour Party have gained control of the entire party apparatus. You know, when those Labour MPs left to go and set up Change UK, you know, Tom Watson's argument was, well, we can find a way to out-organise the Corbynites. You know, that's how we're going to get the party back. It's always the old Labour rights view that you basically take on the left by out-organising them, finding some rules, a rules-based solution to your problem. I think the fact Tom Watson is standing down is a recognition that that is not possible. But, you know, I thought Rob Colville of the CPS said last night, and I mean, there is a truth in this. You know, Hugh Gaitskell said in 1960, you know, I will fight and fight again to save the party I love, when he was fighting the left. Tom Watson just says, I'm often pleased by my diet book. I mean, it is hard to be impressed by this. I also think this, I cannot join in all the lamenting of Tom Watson's this great figure, when it is worth remembering that he spread baseless rumours about people being a paedophile, using parliamentary privilege to attack people. He needs to reflect on that, you know. And in this election, there would have been a candidate standing in his constituency who was one of those people. And I mean, you know, I mean that there is a
Harvey Proctor.
There is a need for some caution about people's desire to kind of lionise him. And I mean, the question now essentially becomes, you know, of Labour voters, how many of them take the kind of Tom Watson school of, oh, I'll vote Labour because, you know, it's still my party, despite whatever reservations I have about Jeremy Corbyn? Or how many go down the Ian Austin route of, like, well, it's not the old Labour Party that I joined, and I don't think this guy should be Prime Minister?
I think it's also worth pointing out, there's been some talk that it doesn't look like a dead set, but the Tories did have this, you know, seat in their sights. And I thought it could be one of the most high-profile scalps when we talk about potential Michael Petillo moments. Yeah, going in, so the MPs who lose their seats, who are known by perhaps a majority might be going far, but a large chunk of the public. So there was a chance he wasn't going to win it anyway. It'd be interesting to see who replaces him. I mean, I presume that what we're seeing at the moment, and we've seen yesterday, is actually the National Executive Committee of Labour and was taking control back from local parties to try and impose candidates. And I think that given this one is so close to the election starting, you might see the Corbyn-heavy NEC pick someone to replace Tom Watson in that seat. But also currently having an ongoing row about John Mann's old seat with Sally Jimson is a candidate there and was picked by the local party, but the NEC have now got involved, and there are some saying this is a stitch up because they want to put in a more left-wing candidate, and that's an ongoing process. The other news that's probably worth mentioning in terms of potential Labour seats is that Chris Williamson, the NEC, decided could not be or would not be the Labour candidate for his seat of Derby North. Now, Chris Williamson has been in the headlines for his various questionable comments on anti-Semitism. I think probably the most obvious being when he said that the party had been too apologetic on anti-Semitism. Now, he has now decided that he is going to stand as an independent. Again, I think whenever a candidate stands as an independent, it is a very uphill process. Unless you have amazing name recognition and you are seen as an impeccable local MP and don't have that many parties, I suppose, standing against you, it's hard to see how you win that seat. But what's interesting about it is how it affects the vote shares. And Derby North is a tight Tory Labour seat. And at the moment, Labour have a majority of just over 2,000. So I think that there'll be some in CCHQ who are cheered by the news that Chris Williamson is planning to stand alongside a Labour candidate as well, because I think it's those type of vote splits that could ultimately make all the difference in terms of this election.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And speaking of people who are becoming politically homeless, this week in the magazine we have a piece by Matthew Paris, who's left the Conservative Party and will be voting for the Lib Dems this election, and a piece by Tanya Gold, our columnist, who's a British Jew and cannot bring herself to vote for Labour in this election as she usually would. We speak to both of them on the Spectator podcast this week, so just go find that at Spectator Radio later today. Thanks for listening, and join us again later today.